Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started.
Welcome back to another session for the Way Forward Summit 2022. I'm joined by Renate Stralifer from We Are Not Sam, and this is going to be an interesting and somewhat ironic conversation because we're using a lot of technology right now. So we're going to be discussing the not only the harmful effects of electromagnetic fields and electromagnetic frequencies and our exposure to them, which is sort of inevitable in this modern day life, especially if we're wanting to connect like we can across the world. You're in Australia, I'm in the US, and it's really cool that we're able to use these technologies to connect, but there's also a lot of harmful effects associated with them. And the primary point of this conversation is to discuss how we can mitigate the potential harms from EMFs. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce yourself and share a bit of your background, because you have a really interesting and insightful perspective on EMFs.
Thanks, Alec. Yeah, I'm super excited to be on this summit with you. And it was something that I was looking into. It was a saying that I say to myself quite often is that, you know, if I'm in a position where I'm able to, I think Jim Morrison said it best, actually. I might just quote him rather than myself. And he said, there are things known and things unknown, and in between are the doors. And I think these moments where, you know, you're being called to speak about your past and your truth is really about knocking on those doors and seeing what happens. I mean, I had a girlfriend say to me the other day, how do you prepare for interviews? And I was like, well, I just honor the ideas that have been placed, that have placed their trust in me in that moment. And so that's what we're going to do today. And I'm going to tell you about my wild ride into how I've gotten into what I'm doing today. But my background is telco marketing. And, you know, I studied marketing, not to do telco.
Time out for those who aren't accustomed to her language and her accent in the US, what she's talking about is telecommunications marketing. So like marketing for the telecommunications industry.
That's it. So I was doing marketing for the largest telecommunications company here in Australia. I got taken in as a graduate. It was 10 of us Australia-wide. And lately, I talk about it in such a kind of, it's a funny walk that you make, you know, when you realize there's certain moments in your life that stamp you, you know. And when I take those walks down memory lane, it's incredible to me that it still makes me a little bit emotional when I think back to certain moments and certain projects and campaigns that I worked on, unknowingly, you know, releasing technologies that I didn't realize and I didn't look into. And I think that's, you know, that can be said for a lot of people in a lot of industries today. So I guess when you're hearing this story about my past, you know, take that into account. It's like a naive 20-something year old who, you know, gets put into the largest 3GSM mobile, you know, network rollout of the entire planet. And it was my job, you know, billion-dollar budget, 5,000 new sites and 10 months to roll it out, brand new routers in households. And you literally had to market people to understand that having video calls and picture messages and internet and emails was not a thing of sci-fi anymore. It was the thing of the current present moment. And so that was my job. My job was to get people excited about this new way of connecting. And I genuinely thought, this is so exciting. This is what everybody's going to want to be using and connecting with. And I was really enjoying it. I was being flown around all around the country, winning incredible awards for the marketing that we were doing. And I was sort of swept up by, you know, I guess the narrative that so many people are getting swept up with today. I mean, I was swept up with it internally. And then it wasn't until my husband, because we got a new router at home, and he was like, you got to look into this router. I'm really thinking that I'm not sleeping well and I'm having certain issues because of it. And he's in risk assessment. He was banking at the time. And I thought, he doesn't really complain about much. So I went looking in the database and I found that 38% of my market were concerned about health effects. So I went storming into my executive director's office. 38%. Wow. And that was in Euro Morgan, which is a huge database that we used at the time, I remember. And I went into my executive director's office and she gave me a look, and it was one of those looks that you never, ever forget in your lifetime. And it was a look to basically tell me to get my foot out of the door. These are topics that we do not talk about. So I'm a naturally very curious person. So I went to the market research team, and there were certain people in certain research departments that I knew, but one in particular that I knew would tell me what was really going on. And he did. He took me out of the office, took me for a coffee, and he said, you know, mobile phones are being tested for safety on a plastic dummy. I was like, what? A plastic dummy they call SAM, specific anthropomorphic mannequin. Most people will never be able to pronounce that, but that's just a big sciencey word for dummy. And they fill him up with liquid gel and they put a thermometer in after 6 minutes to see if there was any heating effects after SAM the dummy was on a six-minute call. And I thought, this is ridiculous. There's a non-biological test. There's no cells, no organs, no DNA, no reproductive systems, no electrical wiring and firing of the brain, just a glorified dummy that is tested for 6 minutes. And this is how they've, you know, proliferated the market with technologies that wouldn't have necessarily passed any normal biological test because they knew it was fraudulent, they knew it was negligent, and this is how they've rushed so many technologies onto the market that we're seeing today. And, you know, that carried with it addiction, and what we're seeing today is far more surveillance because we're so addicted. And I remember at the time how, what a toll it took on me, because these were people that I was so close to, you know, my colleagues I traveled with all around the country that we, you know, we won awards, and it was just a wild ride. And I remember telling them, like, do you guys understand that this is tested for safety on a dummy? And the excuses of looking the other direction, you know, I've got, you know, mortgage, my kids in schools, you know, all the expenses were sort of given to me as reasons as to why the truth shouldn't come out. And I couldn't bear it. Like, I just remember it eating me up inside. And I think that, you know, there was a saying that I remember reading. Oh, I can't remember the exact words, but it was around truth and that you've got to use truth even in the smallest dose. It's really potent. And I remember thinking that the only way to put an end to this guilt that I was feeling, this burning fire, is to extinguish it with truth. That I knew that dishonesty was the fear of truth. And I started speaking about it everywhere, and I got gaslit. You know, I was very much stonewalled. I was, you know, certain campaigns were taken away from me. And I remember just coming home and thinking, there's literally nobody that wants to talk about this with me at the office, and everyone's choosing to look the other way. And it's very indicative of the times that we're living in. You know, there's certain CDs, you know, that I play in my mind, and music that plays back, you know, like, funny that you remember certain music and takes you back to certain moments. And I remember ads, you know, that I used to do with Telstra, and there's certain music that plays and it gives me like this feeling, these certain triggers, you know, and those CDs, you know, the cognitive dissonance is, you know, CD, and now I'm choosing to do civil disobedience as a different CD, but the point was, the point was that I had to come back to it, and at that time the best I could do was run away from it to get away and to recoup and to figure out what I'm going to do with what I now know. And I just said to my husband, like, let's go overseas. He's Swiss, and so we went to Switzerland. I thought we'd go for a year, and came back 9 years later, and I'd followed the rollout of 4G. I'd tried so many times speaking to people about it, but it was eating me up inside, and that's what guilt does, and that's what not dealing with the truth does, is it doesn't solve anything. The truth is really the only thing that can get us on track. And I think it is, I think truth will save the world. I really do believe that. I'm here to speak truthfully and basically watch what happens. I take the consequences of what I say, and I have faith that things will work out in our favor, but perhaps they will and perhaps they won't. But I'm not sure in my lifetime what we're going to see resolved in terms of the damage that's already been done. But I guess, you know, it's a decision that I make every single day to speak my truth. And it took me 9 years because I truly believe that it's the only way forward is through truth and transparency. And that's what I've done ever since. I came back, had a little boy. He was 9 months old at the time. And I went to my first farmer's market and I got handed a stock 5G flyer. And that's when my husband gave me a nudge. And he said, like, this is your moment to make it right. You've wanted to do this for so long. And I continue to do what I do best, which is marketing, but the campaign is called We Are Not Sam. As I said, the dummy is called Sam that they test on, so we are not dummies. And it's been a global campaign. It's got the support of Children's Health Defence and Environmental Health Trust and scientists from like 52 different countries. And I've just been able to meet the most incredible people worldwide talking about, you know, what's going on right now. And I knew back then, like, that this was geared towards addiction and I could see the trajectory towards surveillance. But even I am sitting back going, wow, I never imagined it to come out of this sort of scenario of a pandemic and how much they've used, you know, the idea of keeping you safe through technology and keeping you home using technology. I underestimated just how much, how nefarious that this entire industry is.
And as you went down that rabbit hole, so to speak, regarding the harms of these technologies, obviously, it started with your husband experiencing these negative effects, but what did you discover? Obviously, you discovered that from inside the industry, the safety tests they're doing are complete nonsense. But when you sort of went down that rabbit hole to discover some other areas that may or may not have done testing properly, what did you discover with regards to the harmful effects of this technology?
Well, there is no safety testing. I mean, most people just assume the safety is just there. It's not. There is no safety testing when it comes to mobile phones. I mean, the fact that it's a glorified dummy says everything. And they treat us like dummies. But if you want to look at it from a deeper level, the way in which they came up with this dummy test is they took the top 10% of military recruits in 1989 and they said, this is our ideal mobile phone user. And they made the dummy head like a bowling ball shaped head based on his 5 kilo head. And we know that women,
too, and I know I have a huge head, so
women, children, and the elderly do not have head sizes of this dummy Sam. In fact, children absorb 150% more radiation than this dummy Sam. That's what research has shown. And so just alone, the way in which they discovered, hey, we found our ideal mobile phone user, that stereotype that they found was a 6'2" tall adult male, military recruit, that is got a 5 kilogram head, and that's only indicative of 3% of the world's population. So at best, they were trying to create safety for 3% of the world's population. So those people that are thinking there's rigorous testing going on, there isn't. And it's a fraudulent test. It's flawed by design. And it works in a way that only measures heating effect, which is a non-biological test. So checking for a 1 degree heating effect on a dummy after a 6 minute call is ludicrous. And it's meant to represent an average human being that uses a device today. It's not taking into account the fact that we're using our phones a lot more than 6 minutes a day. And we are not Sam, we are not a dummy, and we're definitely not a military recruit and the strongest men in our society. But the manufacturers themselves, what I started to look into and I realized that they're actually recommending between 5 millimeters and 25 millimeters distance from you and the device. So they don't even hold the device when they're testing it against the dummy's head because the dummy doesn't even pass his own test. So they need to create a spacer. So they create a spacer between his head and the phone of around 5 to 25 millimeters. So they measure it on the spacer because they know that he doesn't pass when it's against the head. And that is why in our compliance section of our user guides, they've actually been writing this for a decade, that you shouldn't hold your phone against your head. And it should be at least 5 to 10 millimeters away from the body. Most people carry phones on their body. They carry it on their body, in their pocket. And the top four diseases that kill our adolescents are the top four areas that we hold mobile phones. And that's thyroid, rectal, testicular, and brain cancer. So, you know, back pocket, front pocket, head, et cetera. And the problem is that we're not actually testing the cumulative effect of not just your mobile phone, but you've got about 20 wireless devices going on in your home. We're talking your Bluetooth speakers, your router, your everyone's got more than one mobile phone at home,
like and Amazon your Alexas or like Apple TVs,
your iWatch, and so this is only going to get worse because they're predicting that by 2025 there's 75 billion objects connected to the 5G network, right? So imagine what we've got now, but times 100, times 1,000, it could even be more than that, depending on whether or not we make the conscious choice to say, hey, I'm going to draw a line in the sand and I'm going to self-regulate when it comes to these devices because the testing is flawed. And we know that the majority of adults have, the majority of adults have much bigger size heads than children. You know, we're talking children absorb twice as much as adults, and a 10-year-old will absorb 150% more radiation than the dummy Sam. So the reason this technology has actually proliferated the market is because of this safety test. If we can't get safety first, if we can't get safety right, then we are only going to accelerate the amount of technologies that are going to enter our atmosphere, because no technology is replacing another technology. It's just an addition. In terms of radiation, it's adding. It's never taking over something else that's existed. So in other words, 4G does not replace 3G and 5G does not replace 4G. These are additions in our atmosphere. So we have to make sure that we understand that every time we give consent to our, let's say a 5G phone, because our main message is to boycott 5G phone, that the power is in your hands. Well, that message is actually saying, hey, if I'm not going to get a 5G phone, I'm not actually activating the network. And that's true. So in order for you to activate the network, the very first thing you do is buy a 5G phone because you're giving consent. So that's how you boycott the network. And this is the trajectory that we need to be on in order to put the pressure back on the industry and say, we're not buying it because you don't have proper safety testing. And now we've got a landmark ruling. We worked with Children's Health Defence alongside them when they had their landmark ruling last year. And they proved in the second highest court in America, which is the Court of Appeals, that this dummy test is fraudulent and negligent, and that they have never taken into account non-cancer-related effects from mobile phones and wireless radiation, and that they weren't doing their job when it came to regulating this industry and these technologies. So now we're going to have to go through a process where it might take years, just like it did with asbestos, just like it did with tobacco, that it always favors the industry, innocent until proven guilty. So there has to be enough people sick for them to change something. And they submitted tens and thousands of papers showing that there was biological harm. And the way in which this is currently moving in the direction of 5G is, where 4G's got circular beamforms and so does 3G, 5G becomes directional laser beams. These are military-grade technologies. And that's what they're trying to put into our atmosphere right now. They haven't started the full rollout of 5G with their small cells, which is what's required for 5G. 5G requires these backpack size antennas every 200 meters because it doesn't go through dense materials very well. So in order for them to have the 5G rollout the way that they want it, they need small cells every 200 meters down urban streets, all over our cities, and that is what's going to connect the Internet of Things. So your baby's nappy talks to your milk carton, your fridge and your coffee machine, and everything's interconnected on the internet. So we need to be mindful of the fact that most people just think 5G is like a simple upgrade to 4G. It's just going to give me faster internet. It can't be further from the truth. 5G is nothing like 4G. It's an addition, it's another wireless generation. Yes, you can call, the name fifth generation, but the name is just a name. It's a whole new infrastructure, and it's going to occupy a frequency band that its predecessors like 4G and 3G, it's going to prove it that that's insufficient for what they need for the Internet of Things. If they want 75 billion objects on, talking to the internet, your bed, your bike, your baby nappy, your watch, your water bottle, everything connecting to the internet, they need so much new infrastructure to get closer to your bodies because data is the new gold. This is the Wild West of the gold rush is data. So the thing is that before we've got between 800 megahertz and 2.5 gigahertz, and that's going to lose people, but it's just to show that it's quite low, right? Yep. Whereas with 5G, with millimeter waves, they're ranging between 10 to 100, and now they're talking about 300 gigahertz. Military grade weapon is 95. That's where you can floor people to the ground with radiation, which they've used in the military.
Yeah, the active denial system, right? That was literally the same exact technology. Yeah.
That's right. And we're roughly one third the frequency, you know, in terms of millimeter waves, it's roughly one third the frequency of an X-ray. And this is uncharted territory, to put it mildly. You know, millimeter waves have major downsides. They don't travel as far as lower frequency waves, and they're definitely unable to pass through buildings. You know, these frequencies are absorbed by trees. They're going to have to cut down a lot of trees. It's absorbed by the Earth's atmosphere and the uppermost layers of, you know, the human skin. So to the drawback, you know, the telecommunications companies will need to install a sweeping number of small cells, which, you know, need to work in that short-range cellular antenna, really outside your kids' bedroom windows. That's how close they need to read everything. And this is what we need to be aware of. I mean, this is the, you know, this is not a distance of, you know, a tower a kilometer or 10 kilometers away. This is, you know, within 100 meters of our homes. And, you know, this is a limited coverage area that these 5G technologies can cover. So they need to be everywhere, every 10 to 12 household. Think about it like that. And it will be making EMF radiation almost impossible to avoid. So people need to understand that even though it can't reach as far into our bodies as, say, like the lower radiation frequency waves, it can still reach one of the most important organs, and that's our skin. It can damage the cells that can affect important biological processes. And some of them, you know, include things like, you know, it can affect people in terms of blindness or hearing loss, oxygen depletion, infertility, skin cancers, thyroid issues, nervous system dysfunctions. And that's what was proven in court. Those things are undeniable. Wireless radiation causes those things. Where the industry focuses on cancer, because they go, well, if you haven't got cancer, it's not doing anything. So people have been systematically hypnotized by the idea that if you're not at the worst case scenario of sickness, which is cancer, then it can't be that bad. And it is bad, because people that suffer with really bad immune dysfunction issues, it's terrible. And they, you know, people are more electrosensitive than they want to admit.
Yep. And something that comes up for me regarding everything that you're saying about the safety, a good friend of mine, Dr. Stanton Hom, has said this frequently with regards to the vaccines, both the COVID vaccines and all previous childhood vaccines, is that because the safety testing is essentially non-existent and fraudulent, both with that and also with what we're talking about here, the harm is actually potentially infinite, and it really is unknowable. We have no idea of the true negative impact of these things. We can sort of, you know, there's limited studies that indicate how harmful they are, and we know they are harmful, but we don't know how harmful these technologies really are to human health. So I want to transition now that we've set the context, and it's like, I can understand where people would be like, oh my God, like very overwhelmed by that, right? And there's still even more to go into with that. And I'm sure people can check out more on wearenotsam.com, but what can we do? Just shoot it to me straight. What can we do as individuals and then in community to both recognize the upside of using some of these technologies? Again, we're using technology to connect across the world right now. Luckily, my computer is hardwired, it's Ethernet. But what can we do to first approach this technology in a conscious way, right? And not become addicted to it. But then also, I'd like to get into after that how we can mitigate the effects of EMFs.
Oh, such a great question. Helena Nordbrick Hodge, she's a local woman who did a documentary called The Economics of Happiness, and I know her personally. She's wonderful. And she asked a really great question in our local paper. It was a simple question. You know, the question was, have all the investments in big tech and big infrastructure made the world a better place? There is a clear cultural turning, I believe, that's visible right now, even in the mainstream, that people are rejecting the posture of this consumer culture. You know, they're wanting instead to slow down. They don't want to speed up. They actually want to slow down. They want to spend less time on screens. They want to cultivate deeper relationships and engage more in their communities, and also to do more nature-based activities. So if you're viewing this from like a big picture perspective, you know, rejecting the imposition of 5G, you know, a technology that will create a giant leap forward on the globalizing techno-economic path, you know, it's a no-brainer, right? Why on earth should we accept an energy and mineral intensive technology infrastructure that is fundamentally about speeding life up, increasing our screen time, automating our jobs, tightening the grip of the 1% over the rest of us, when what we really want is connection, like real connection? And at a time when we're urgently needing to be investing in, you know, they say, you know, in economies that minimize our use of energy and resources, this is not a good example of that. You know, 5G is very energy intensive. So we don't need to be conspiracy theorists to see that adopting this whole 5G infrastructure is not actually in the best interest of the people or the planet. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to prove that negative health effects of 5G, you know, we've already done that. There's over 2,000 peer-reviewed reports showing biological harm from 2G, 3G and 4G. You know, there's reason for concern, but do we need to prove it anymore? Probably not. We simply, and that's what I loved about what she said to me, is like, you simply need to reject the top-down pressure to pursue what's an ever more speedy competitive race to the bottom. So how do we work to actually strengthen the world that we're trying to be, that we're trying to create at a grassroots level on every continent, every single day? And that's what you're asking me. Like, you're asking me, how do we actually come together and create a way forward, right? Which is what I love so much about this summit. And there are ways in which we have to take radical honesty about the ways in which we're using technology. And you're right. I mean, I've got to show you guys here, Ethernet cables, all the adapters that are possible in terms of connecting you.
My headphones are an example.
Your headphones with the Fender Shields are a great example. So, you know, we're not really at a point where we can expect an industry that has done so much harm, where we're pointing at them saying, you do the things that should make it better for us. They've proven for 25 years that they have no safety interests. So we have to take safety into our own hands. And that's why the main message of our campaign, We Are Not Sam, is the power is in your hands. Literally, we have so many sensors in our hands. If we actually go back to creating, to building, to using our hands in a way that is resourceful, because these technologies are making our hands pretty much blunt instruments. I mean, you and I have talked about this before, right? It's literally what it's doing. It's you're putting a device in your hand, and that device under what's called the peripersonal space, and you should look up this science, is that your body swallows up this device as being part of you. That's why people think, oh, I feel naked without my device. Because your body, through the peripersonal space, which is this idea that your body swallows up anything that you hold on to for too long and maps it out as part of you. That's why if you're driving a car long distance and you duck under a bridge and you're like, why the hell did I just do that? And that's because your body's mapped out the car in the same way that your body maps out the phone. So how do we actually become far more conscious when it comes to what it is that we're touching, what it is that we're literally wearing on our bodies? Because we need to make sure that we're not trying to give our power away to an industry and asking them to change something if we're not prepared to do any of the work ourselves. And that's why, you know, there are incredible ways and really simple ways actually to take some safe technology tips. And I'll give a few would you like me to name a few that are really simple?
Please. Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So first of all, distance is important. You know, the concept that distance is your friend is number one when it comes to devices. Whether it's a router or whether it's a mobile phone or even if it's your laptop, you should be able to high-five your laptop. That's how far away you should be from your laptop. And, you know, the distance part is that, radiation, wireless radiation, decreases very rapidly when you increase the distance from the wireless device, right? Yeah. So that's if you are out and about, if you're not wired. In my case, I'm wired. But if you're out and about, distance is your friend. Decrease the exposure by increasing the distance. Just remember that, right? Always keep your mobile phone, your laptops away from your body. If it's on your body, put it aside. Second thing, identify the sources in your house. So take a look around. How many wireless things do you have? And literally have a look. Most people haven't even considered this. They look at their baby monitors. They look at their laptops, their iPads, their iWatch, whatever they've got going on in their phone, in their household, have a good look and become aware of the different sources that are emitting wireless radiation in your home, right? Because when you identify it, then you can go, hang on a second, does that need to be on? You know, the gaming consoles, the cordless phone, the mobile phone, the wireless security systems, there are probably things in there you haven't even considered, but they're actually emitting wirelessly. And then make a decision whether or not you need them. Number three, airplane mode, which is what my phone's on at the moment. If anything, I prefer to keep my phone off, but in this instance, because I was trying to see if I was online correctly with you, Alec, I was like, I better put on airplane mode. But airplane mode, I think it's called flight mode where you are, I'm not sure. But it's a setting on your wireless device that stops the microwave radiation emission. It literally turns the antenna off. So that is what you're going to learn to use is airplane mode, far more than what you're probably using today. There are devices that can literally turn your airplane mode back on. So you need to keep checking that it's turned off. It's quite weird how they do that. But anyway, every computer, laptop, tablet, there is a function key that turns off the Wi-Fi transmitter. And there's also a function key that turns off the Bluetooth transmissions. So whenever you're handling a device, be mindful that you can do airplane mode and Bluetooth off, because there's up to 900 handshakes per minute between you and the nearest tower. So
can I add something there real quick too? So something that you can buy in order to still continue using your phone on airplane mode but still connect to internet is an Ethernet adapter. So if you have hardwired internet, you can still use your phone if you want to. And I use this pretty often. You just plug this into any Ethernet port with an Ethernet cord and then plug it directly into your phone. And then you can use that instead of using the wireless aspect of your phone.
It's the best thing you can get. It's an Ethernet cable. And the reason is because you're not actually having wireless radiation in the house whatsoever. So if you need to be out of your house and you need to be connected, these are the tips for you: airplane mode, Bluetooth off, distance is your friend. But if you're at home, in my opinion, you should just be wired up. It's that simple. You should just, at home, I'm wired. That's the way it is. You know, that's the best way to reduce your mobile phone exposure, because you get an Ethernet adapter, and I've got two examples in here, and, you know, you make sure that adapter fits the make and model of your mobile or your computer, and you've got internet that's safer, it's more secure, and it's faster because it's wired. And I'll explain why wired is so brilliant and why actually wired is regulated and that wireless industry is deregulated. So there's a reason for that, and we'll get into it. But speakerphone is also really important. So if you don't, you know, whatever you do, if you're out and about, don't put your phone against your ear. We've talked about how the dummy's actually tested away from his ear. So put it on speakerphone. That's one other really quick little tip. But don't sleep with your phone next to your bed. Get an alarm clock or whatever it is that you need, that you think you need your phone for. But the worst sleep you're going to get is with your phone next to your bedside table, basically, because it literally is radiating at you all night. And so
it's kind of nefarious too, because the iPhone, Apple's come up with all these apps now where you can like track your sleep health if you place your phone on your pillow while you're sleeping. It's absurd how they try to, again, get us to continue to get the technology into every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, there was a research paper done by PEW, and they reported that 75% of children sleep every night with their mobile phone beneath their pillow. 75%. Wireless radiation and blue light, let me be clear, it impacts your sleep. You know, all screens, any electronics they should not be in your bedroom, basically. You know, if you need an alarm clock, or if, you know, you're going to get a ping or a message in the middle of the night, are you really going to get up? So the thing is that we've become so addicted to technology, and you talked about this before, that we literally think we can't sleep unless we know it's safely beside our head. Mm-hmm. This is an issue. This is a really serious issue that 75% of kids sleep every night with their mobile phone beneath their pillow. So, so we were talking about safe tech tips. The other thing thing is, if you can text instead of talk, do that. And the low signal usually gets people really like curious. Like they didn't know this, but the weaker your signal strength is actually the stronger the radiation is from your phone. So all these people that are like, oh, my, I've got such weak signal, that is literally an indicator that the radiation is going strong. Weak signal.
Because does that mean that your phone is trying to ping towers more often to get a better signal?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's right.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, most people don't. And when I tell them, they're like, oh. So I say, yeah, beware of low signal. And so these are some of the like simple tech tips that you can take in your home, but also, you know, when you're out and about. And just remember, like these devices, you can actually go places without a device. I know that sounds like, whoa, 2022, but like you can literally leave the house without a device.
It's so sad though, because I mean, I've caught myself so many times where like I left the house the other day without my phone and I was like, oh my God, like, am I going to be okay? And of course I'm going to be freaking okay. And that's the problem too, is I think Western culture for the most part sort of proliferates the use of these technologies because we are so go, 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 go mentality driven that we don't know when to turn it off. You know what I mean? Like to turn off the faucet or turn off the switch, the proverbial switch, so to speak, on work, on content. We don't know how to be still and be present anymore. So we think we have to have our phone with us at all times.
Yeah. And isn't it strange that like most people will give their kids a phone or will take a phone with them, like as a parent, for example, I'm a parent, you're a parent, because in case, you know, something goes wrong or for safety reasons, right? Like, but this phone is tested on a dummy for safety. Like the fact that they've trained us to believe that we shouldn't leave our home without a phone because of security and safety reasons, and they do no safety testing. It's just, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. And the best tip that I can give, and it's something that I speak into so much, is to get earthed. That is literally your detox. You know, you swim in the ocean, you walk barefoot on damp grass. But the antidote to this is for people to connect back to nature. And that is so important as a safe tech tip, because we have to choose to reconnect with something that is natural. Otherwise, we're going to be connecting only to that unnatural world. And this is what this device is designed to do. It's designed to like put you into this vortex. And if you see children who are in devices long enough, you'll start to notice they look hypnotized. And every parent goes through that feeling when you notice your child looking at a screen and you go, oh, look at them. They're just completely zonked out. Yeah. And that's not a good feeling to have. And it's also not really, it's really terrible for them as well, because they're actually not participating in the real world. They're completely in a vortex.
We do it too, though. We disassociate the more that we're on this technology. We disassociate and we're not, I mean, I notice a distinct difference when I'm, let's say, in front of my computer working a lot during the day. And that's even with hardwired internet. Like I have Ethernet on my computer, but nonetheless, being on my computer all day, when I leave that, I have to like decompress and really reorient myself to reality, like back to feeling still and present in the moment. It's like there's two different versions of me almost. It's really quite strange.
Yeah, it is, because and I'll talk about this from a marketing perspective as well. It's stealing your attention from what's really going on. And that's what these advertisers, Facebook, all of them, they pay for your attention. That's
this is a good segue have. Because you've been involved with marketing, right? So you know how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can talk about that as well. But there was a picture that I looked at just yesterday, Alec, and it was this mom who was on her phone while her kid was trying to play with her. And it said, your phone keeps you close to the people far away, because she was on her phone. So your phone keeps you close to the people far away, but far away from the people close to you. And I was just like, cool, because we've all been guilty of that, like where our kids trying to get our attention, but we're like, oh, I'm going to quickly send this one little thing. And this one little thing is endless. You know, it just doesn't stop, you know. And that's the thing about how we're trying to teach our children. This is such an important lesson of 5G, right? We're trying to teach our children to participate in the world. I mean, isn't that really what it's about? You know, especially now when it's so easy to be on a device, how do you actually go out and play and immerse yourself in the natural world, you know, in what's really happening and real connections in real time. And the thing about marketing is like marketing, and telcos do this so brilliantly, marketing is emotional, right? So the only commodity being sold or bought in marketing is your story. So they're literally coming to you with a story, and that's effective marketing, by the way. It's not just, you know, manipulative marketing, but effective marketing is always emotional. And it's emotional because it touches on things like safety and health and our nostalgia and regret, things we wish we didn't do or things that we wish that we did. And so we're constantly bombarded with all this marketing information through our devices, right? Romance, community. It doesn't matter even if you're on the same page as you and I, right? Obedience or pain or reassurance or strength or something. Like there's always something coming up for you that's triggering an emotion through these devices, right? And it's designed that way. And it's designed to get your attention because how, I'll ask you a question, how will you know before you finish the muffin if it's delicious?
How will I know before I finish the muffin if it's delicious? Taking the first bite, I'll know if it's
delicious. Well, the point is you can't know. You can't know, right? So we build marketing around the sense that people pay with their attention, their trust, their money before they know. This is why the world is taking on so many experimental technologies before they know. It's built into marketing. Okay. It's the idea that we make a promise. You know, we promise you that if you give us your attention, if you give us your body, if you give us your mind, and if you spend your time and money, you will get something. You will be able to go to work or travel or get this job or go to the movies with your kids, whatever. The promise, it hooks directly into the changes that we're seeking to make, right, with our lives. So that's what marketing does. And that means that we go to an audience, right, any audience, that's what marketers do, and we say, may I have your attention? And this is actually where change happens, because where we place our attention and technology is the biggest place we pay our attention, right? We literally pay and they pay for it. And the lazy solution is to say, I'm not going to make any change at all. This is screwy. This is terrible. Marketing is terrible. Actually, marketing is not terrible. It's just it's a method in which to get attention. But that doesn't mean that it needs to be done in a nefarious way. But now you're looking at it from that lens, right, on how they're doing it to you through these devices. But the difficult solution is to actually affect humans at the root. And there's a sweet spot somewhere in the middle there, Alec. But the position that you are leveraging is that you've got to try to satisfy needs, right? This is what marketing does. It satisfies needs. This is what technology does. It satisfies needs. And you've got to reconsider the existing solution because people need devices. If you ask somebody, do you need your device? Nobody's going to say no, right? People do say, I need my device. I need my device for contacting my friends, family, emails, et cetera. There's a need there, right? And it can be used in a meaningful way. It can be. It can be used in a safe way, in a more discerning way. But I think we're meeting today on this summit to inspire, I think, evolution from the inside out, right?
Yes,
and inside. This sort of like makes me a little bit emotional. Like I'm finding myself like gulping at the moment, and that is because I think that, you know, I've seen what you've gone through, and I've gone through something quite similar, but I think we're provocateurs of the highest good. I think this is what the health and freedom movement, you know, for the fringe dwellers and the outcasts and, you know, those that dare to actually set path on a road that's less traveled, there's a cultural revolution going on and we're being called to this moment, and this is bigger than us. And we know this. We know that, you know, what my girlfriend said to me about, you know, honoring the ideas that have placed their trust in you. And that's what the calling is. And if you want to look at it as a metaphor for the times that we're living in, I'm talking about technology, but what's the real calling? And the calling is like, when are we going to get ready to take radical honesty about why we're literally disconnecting from reality and using the excuse of being on a device? Oh, and that's like, that is some big stuff that we've got to go down to understand.
Isn't it so nefarious too, how it's, I'm going to try to tie this thought together and I think you'll get where I'm going with this. Like, again, we're using these devices right now to communicate there's, you know, I don't know how many thousands of people watching this right now that have signed up for this summit, that are using this to watch what we're saying. And it's, we're almost being tricked into, for those that are awake, right, to continuing to use these technologies too, where they're pigeonholing us as well. And then add censorship on top of that. And it really messes with your psyche when you're trying to help people disconnect from the funnel that they're leading us down towards a more disconnected, a more synthetic reality. And you're having to use their systems and their technologies. I'm saying this as the they, right? We don't know who they are. We have an idea of who they is at the very top, but we're having to use all that they've built in order to preach a message that goes against them. And they're like leading us with a carrot on a stick down this rabbit hole where we're continuing to use their technologies to try to wake people up to where we're almost further enslaving ourselves to some degree if we're not consciously aware of it. You know what I mean?
It's nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. It's almost like the censorship has made us want to be online even more. Have you recognized that most people
that's what I'm saying.
They're like, oh, I'm going to get online. Oh, I'm going to show you. You can't censor me. And I'm like, you're playing into the demon.
Yes.
And I know.
Because, like, call me out right now. But that's so true.
We've all been there. I've been there too. I'm like, oh, they just shut down. They've shut down four of my recent interviews. And I'm like, oh, I'll keep doing interviews. You know what I mean? So like,
I'm going to keep using your technology. It's so messed up. It's so nefarious.
But I think, you know, we're getting to like some really interesting territory now, because what we're really trying to get to is transformation, right? So this, the structure of, you know, at first I thought this, but then I realized this, and now I believe this. And I mean, that's what this summit's about, right? So for us to go through on the path of the way forward, we have to go through transformation. And that also means transformation with devices. That also means transformation with how we interact with big tech and what we use and why we use it. And we go into those places because we're willing to truth and dare. Like, we're literally willing to look at the truth of what's in our lives, what's playing out, and dare to do something about it. And I think that's something you do at the level of the soul, to be quite honest. And truth, we keep coming back to that, don't we? Because it's just such an important word of our times. But it ultimately, and marketers know this as well, is like, you can't really do a campaign that is full of shit because most people won't buy it or believe it. So truth is used for a reason, because it creates trust. You know, to create any type of action, we have to bring, and this is something that you and I are feeling right now in this moment, because we're kind of laughing, but we're also going, holy shit, that feels a bit tense. You know what I mean? Like, we're bringing tension to the table in a way, right? So if we're seeking to change the narrative or the story or whatever you want to call it, like, I don't really know the best word for it, but basically to make the mainstream obsolete, we've got to create an offer that exists that's better than what's on offer, right? So that's what the way forward is all about. And if something shifts and that shift feels like tension, you know you're moving in the right direction, because change means tension. And if we do it right, it's released in a forward motion that leads to trust. And I think tension can create our state. And most people, and you said this right before we started the interview, is like, we're not going to bypass what's going on. And we're not going to sing Kumbaya on the top of a mountain, pretend it's not happening. Because tension is actually a life force, and it can help us find the courage to move forward. And we need tension to birth the new. As a mother, I can tell you, you cannot...
So crazy. You just said birth. That's literally what I was thinking as you were saying this, is like the act of birth itself, the tension that's placed on the mother, the tension that's placed on the baby as, you know, he or she is going through the birth canal, right? That is so much force and tension, and is really painful, and it's a lot of pressure. But what happens after that is life. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's an incredible thing that happens.
Yeah, and that's my motto around necessary tension. I think deep down, Alec, we know, you and I know, that our mission is to show the path of tension, and that is where the juice is. And I know it's how we birth, and I know that's how we get to truth and we dare to do something. This we know for sure. So to push past mediocrity, it's like, it's essential actually to work through tension. And tension is vital because it aspires to create new precedents that move beyond fear And something like, as before I was a mother, I had no idea how it would change my perspective of the world by going through the process of such tension and such fear and such insecurity to be able to birth something new. And that is, most mothers will understand this, and any father who's been in a room can appreciate this. Because if you want to create through love, unity, creativity, it still requires tension. And this shift in perception, this thinking that you can inspire a glitch, you know, that you want to seek, and that has something to do with tension, that is where it becomes more expansive, because tension is necessary, I'll say, for three reasons, right? One, there's discomfort in proposing any idea that might fail. And I've had plenty of ideas that have failed, right? There's discomfort in just proposing an idea that might fail, nevertheless doing it. It's uncomfortable to challenge the way things have always been done. And there is bravery in resisting the urge to settle. And this is all the reasons why necessary, you know, there's tension that's necessary right now. And if you're looking at technology, if you're looking at, you know, what's coming with digital IDs and, you know, this anti-life agenda, the World Economic Forum and the Yuval Hararis of the world, and you're like, holy crap, this is too big, then come back to that tension that you're feeling and understand it from your own inner world perspective, your own home perspective, your own life perspective, because it's only when they get us focusing on everything that they're planning, all their agendas, all the things that they're going to do to us, is actually where we disassociate from all the little things that we can do that actually make a massive difference.
My God, that was so beautifully said. I don't want to say that you're like stealing the thoughts out of my head, but you literally are. Like, as you're saying them, I'm like, yeah, the whole purpose of that happening, the reason that that happens is so we can reflect back on where we're giving that power again, and how can we then set up things inside our life rather than hyper-focusing on that to where we're perpetuating it, right? And I've said this before with regards to the sort of energetics of that, a situation like that, is that they know, again, whoever they is, they know that we are co-creators of our reality. And they will use that against us, especially for those that are awake, right? Where they will continue to do the most outlandish, stupid ass shit, right? To where we're like, oh my God, how can people not see this? Like, we're shouting it on a mountaintop and we're so focused on it that we're actually perpetuating the manifestation and creation of that reality, rather than looking at that situation, whatever it is, in isolation and saying, oh my God, this is laughable. This is stupid as hell. Okay, now what do we want to do over here for those who are aware that that's stupid, to create, to not only counteract that, to make that completely obsolete? Because it's not even about counteracting. It's about looking at that and saying, like, that is not the reality that I want to live in whatsoever. That is comical. That is ridiculous. I want to get back to nature. So what am I going to do over here? What am I going to create with all the people that I love in reality? To make that completely just not even within the realm of possibilities in my life.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and what's really interesting is, like, I've come to this understanding, Alec, and it's literally what we're talking about right now, is like somebody said to me, like, if you had to put a dart in the highest creative vision you could aim for, like literally, like you just like threw it and it landed and you knew that's your path, right? And I thought about this for a good month, literally, like everything that I was thinking, I was like, no, I could do better. No. And then I reached that point where I was just like, holy shit, that's what it is. And when it came over me, it was like a flood. You know, the fact that I took the time to really try to understand my purpose for being here and what I want to become and what I want to create and what I want to build, because creating, we are co-creators. We know that. We're co-creating with divinity. We're co-creating with a creator, with Mother Earth and our ancestral bloodlines. And if you've got a connection to something higher, something more sacred, you can walk with strength. And I do that work every single day, and it's not easy, and it can literally take you off track sometimes. But I remember thinking to myself when I recognized what it was for me, and I honestly think it's probably one of the most big, it was one of the biggest moments of my life, is when I realized that I genuinely believe that I'm here to have an impact on health and freedom culture, like culture, right? So I'm going to do everything that I can for that. right? Because there's a reason why the times are what they are right now. You know, we're focusing our energy on building and living a way that will resonate with health and freedom as a culture. Not just as like, if I do it and you do it, but if a lot of people do this, that becomes culture. It, literally what culture means is people like us do things like that. That's culture. Yeah. That's how we make change. It's by caring enough to want to change a culture and being brave enough to pick one, right? So I remember looking at this, I think it was a talk someone sent to me, but it was like a while ago. And then I looked into the research behind this talk because I just had to know more. And it was basically this concept that we actually prefer the potential for success over proven success, right? So we would prefer the next big chef over the current five-star chef, right? This is what the research showed. We preferred up-and-coming artists and comedians compared to the award-winning artists and comedians. So if we have a – this is research. We have a preferential – we have a preference for potential over a proven record. And it is both – it's risky and it's irrational, right? But why do we do it? Because the potential for success as opposed to actual success is more interesting because it's less certain. Wow. So our human brains come across uncertainty, come across tension, whatever, and that they tend to pay more attention to that information because they want to figure it out. And that leads to longer in-depth processing and curiosity. So we are inherently curious. So if we think that we've lost anything, we haven't, because we've become more curious. And becoming more curious and dealing with more tension and understanding it doesn't matter what they can prove they can do or can't do, we're actually wired to be risky. We're actually wired to be inherently irrational and to prefer the potential of an idea. So what do? With that? We create potential of more ideas. And we start working on it every single day. That's the secret of leadership, right? Do what you believe in, paint a picture and go there. Literally, that's as simple as I think it is, right? So the forces, as I said to you, of mediocrity, they're going to align to stop you. They're going to forge no errors. And Alec, you know this better than anyone. You've been shut down more than any other person that I know. And if it were any other way, it would be easier. And the challenge that you, and I love this about you, is that you do it anyway. And that's why we're here. It's the yin and yang, right? So without people pushing against your quest to do something worth spreading, it's unlikely it would be worth the journey or the wisdom, right? And I'm not talking about getting on devices. It's, I know that you do things in the flesh. I know you go to your events, but it doesn't matter how much cancel culture is out there, you still find potential. And that's because it's your default setting. I've got the same default setting. Right. And so I just don't know that I'm really in a position to try to convince the masses. I've sort of stopped that a while ago because I'm really focusing on the minority. I don't care if it's 5%, because the potency for me is where the juice is. Right. So I tend to think that this isn't about doing a tally and going, oh, you know, but X percent are doing this and X percent are doing that. If you actually value the minority, and you focus your energy towards a minority, that's where you do your best work. And that's where you feel that you really have purpose, because you're not trying to go for some big number or some big statistic. You're literally saying, hey, I'm focusing on a minority and those are my people.
That is so powerful to hear, because so many of us, let's say influencers, so to speak, or activists are attempting to cater our message to the masses. And I think what that forces us to do in some ways is be inauthentic, because we're having to make concessions in what we truly perceive if we're really attempting to cater to the masses. I think a perfect example of that, I'm not going to name names here, but there are several, let's say, health freedom activists that are well known that have said that they will not touch the terrain message because it is too shocking for people and they aren't ready to hear it. And I'm like, so you are hindering or inhibiting your ability to speak potent truth because you would rather cater to the masses. And I just don't see where, on a large scale, ironically, that is helpful to any degree when we are showing people that it's more important to be inauthentic and cater to a large group of people than it is to be authentic and cater to a smaller group of people. actually having an impact on their thought processes and on culture itself for that smaller group of people.
Oh my God, you just nailed it. I mean, I can't say it better than that, honestly, because these are turbulent times. We know that. There's government overreach and things can feel dark. And we somehow have been led to believe that because we don't have the masses or because we don't have a majority that we're losing. You do not lose with that. That's the opposite of, I don't know what you call it. There's a word for it. But basically, if you actually feel that numbers is the aim here, it's not. It's quality of life. And if you've had an impact on one person in your life, are you going to say it's not worth it? Of course you're not, right? So everything that I do, everything that you do, if it impacts 10 people that day and somebody else who's on the other side, you know, pushing some mainstream narrative has impacted a million people, are those 10 people less worthy than those million over there? No, of course not. So, and this is what shining a light does. It's literally, if you walk in strength and you shine your light, it pierces through the status quo. This is what it does. And it doesn't matter if it pierces through because 10 people got it or a million people got it. You shining your light should be your only focal point. And that is where we dance. We dance because our hearts are ablaze with truth and we're not in this for the numbers game. We're in this because potency wins the game. It only takes a small minority to shift culture, and that is proven statistically. So why are we trying to aim for a huge majority? It makes no sense.
I think I have to, after we save this, shift the title of this talk because yeah, we touched on EMF mitigation, but this became so much more potent and beneficial, at least to me, and I'm sure to the people that are watching this, than I could have imagined, because I sort of went into this thinking like, okay, I am already attuned with the EMF mitigation steps myself, so this is more for the audience, but selfishly, in a weird way, this became medicine for me. And I'm sure it actually, because of that, also became medicine for other people because it became a more authentic conversation focused on the heart that underlies what we're talking about with the agendas that are going on, all these technologies. What is the heart of this? And it's shifting culture. And this has been incredible. And I wish we could go more, but unfortunately we have another session right after this. Renat, you're awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to share as we wrap up here?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, you and I have done two interviews before. We've really dived deep into, you know, technology. And I think the reason why this conversation has gone in the direction that it's gone in is because we have to actually understand there is the only true safety on this planet is your connection to the earth and yourself. Like everything else is trying to make up for that lack of safety. So everything from police, governments, technologies, guns, drugs, is all the disconnection from the natural world, from Mother Earth. And technology is one piece in this massive puzzle, right? So if I'm going to sit here and tell you these are all the ways that you can do technology safely and you can tick those boxes, but if you have to go within yourself to really start to shift and change and understand culture and understand your place in this world, then I think that is the biggest question of all, because the technology is just on the surface. Everything else, you know, this is the, you know, the with the Titanic, right? So, you know, if we're not looking at this in a way that understands and reaffirms our values and gets us to look deeper, then I think I would have done a disservice of just speaking on the surface level stuff. And I know that with you, I can speak on those levels because we have such a great relationship. And I'm so glad that we went there because I've never gone there in an interview before. So
it was beautiful. Thank you so much for this. This has been an incredible conversation. I have so much respect for all the work that you're doing and that you'll continue to do. And if for those watching, if you're wanting to look into more of Renat's work, please check out We Are Not Sam. You may need to start like another separate website just on this piece, because I don't think We Are Not Sam, obviously it's an incredible organization and movement surrounding EMF mitigation and the harmful effects of this technology. But the heart that you just spoke to in this is related to that, but separate, but I would say more potent than what that is. And that's saying something, because We Are Not Sam is an incredible movement organization. So you're awesome, Renat. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Alec. And I'm so, so excited for you and your, my new wow factor I'm saying now is the way factor. So thank you for creating the way factor.
Thank you so much.
There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection, but now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of The We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.